Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere Application Server Version 7 ASP.NET Basics. Today's presenter is Josh Kessler. Josh has worked in IBM for 10 years, starting in IBM AIX Networking and Security Support, and later on moving on to WebSphere Application Server Level 2 Support. At this point in time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Josh.
Hello, everyone. This is ASP.NET Basics for WebSphere Application Server Version 7. You can go to the next slide. Okay, so this presentation is going to discuss basically how to implement ASP.NET Web Authentication in WebSphere Version 7. Just provide a high-level, you know, fundamental overview and basic configuration on how ASP.NET is used for SSO in a WebSphere environment. One of the misconceptions is that you need Kerberos token support to use ASP.NET, and that's not true. So I'd just like to remind everybody that the goal of ASP.NET is to ultimately have clients use LTPA tokens for single sign-on. Next slide. So Microsoft Windows provides for desktop single sign-on over HTTP using the ASP.NET protocol. PC users will authenticate once to their desktop PC and to their Active Directory domain, which they can then securely access other systems transparently. The desire is for WAS to support SSO from Windows transparently. The Kerberos credentials are carried via an ASP.NET Negotiate HTTP authentication header to WebSphere, where they are validated and then inserted into an LTPA token. This is how SSO is possible using ASP.NET with WebSphere, and this presentation is about that solution. Next slide. So the first thing that happens, point of entry, when the client logs in to their PC, they're going to obtain a ticket granting ticket, which we call a TGT. This happens automatically when the Windows client logs into their Active Directory domain. I just highlighted there in the screenshot, in my example, there's an Austin domain that I joined, and I'd just like everyone to know that this is generally the first point, the entry point of most ASP.NET authentication requests. You know, a client will boot up their laptop or PC, and when they log into their domain, they get a TGT automatically without even doing anything. That's something the OS takes care of. So let's go to the next slide. Okay, so the next thing that will happen is the client will later make a request to get a TGS, which is a ticket granting service ticket, to the desired app server. And this is so the client won't have to keep providing its password. And this happens when the client accesses the app server URL. So it can be a web server or an app server host name. It really doesn't matter. Configuration will all be done beforehand. So in this example, the access URL host name, I just have it generically stated there, appserver.domain.com. So when the browser accesses this, WebSphere is going to send a challenge response back, and this is the name that the client is going to get a service ticket for. So it is important to know the exact URL the client is accessing the app server or web server with. We need to know which host name they're using and if that host name is an alias in DNS or not, because WebSphere has a canonicalization feature that can change the behavior of that. Let's move to slide 6, please. And in version 7, there were some enhancements, WCCM model, ASP.NET, and filter classes. They simplified the ASP.NET configuration. There's a lot more admin console panels to configure it versus, you know, setting custom properties back in version 6.1. There's more configurable options. We can now fall back from ASP.NET Web Authentication and use whatever available application method is defined. We can now dynamically update the ASP.NET runtime when ASP.NET filter changes are made, you know, key tab changes, file paths, and you don't have to restart the JVM. Another big change was that it's no longer implemented as a TAI, which is a Trusted Association Interceptor. So that's been deprecated in version 7. Fundamentally, it really is the same. As long as you understand how it works, the configuration's done a little differently, but it's really the same to me. And they added also ASP.NET Web Authentication and Task for some WSAdmin scripting. Okay, let's move to slide 7. And we now support all user registries and platforms that are supported by the WebSphere App Server. Support one or more Active Directory domains in the same or different forest. And there's a link there that links to our info center, and there's some text in there about which trusted domain scenarios we support and do not support when Espinego is involved. The Kerberos configuration and KeyTab file path now support WebSphere variables. If you have a mixed platform environment, you can use a variable there for Kerberos config file. Security code will expand it to an INI or comp file on Windows platforms. We now support multi-security domains, which was new for version 7, and Espinego does work in the security domains. I've run across several scenarios where customers would have a multi-domain setup, but they kept the Espinego configuration separate for the domain. So maybe they had two app servers in the cell, but each one was serving requests for different domains independently of each other because they could do that with security domains. And the officially supported web browser clients at this time, IE6, SP1 are newer, and Mozilla 1.78 and Firefox 1.5 are newer. Officially, we do not support Chrome or mobile browsers at this time. Let's move to slide 8. And here is the login flow of an Espinego login process from start to finish in a nutshell. And I'll just kind of go over it briefly here, starting with number 1, the request ticket granting ticket. That happens from the browser or the client PC when they log into the domain. They ask for the TGT, and they get a ticket back. And then they're going to go to number 3 and access the app server. And then 4 comes back from the app server saying, you know, it's an HTTP 401 challenge. We're asking for an authentication header. At this point, step 5, they're going to request a TGS back from the domain controller. And this is between the client and the AD server, or the domain controller. It's going to ask for a service ticket with the host name of that app server. And assuming that mapping and configuration is there, they will receive the TGS, and they will then present back to the app server using the Espinego HTTP negotiate header, the Espinego token, which WebSphere then, step 8, extracts the user ID. We validate the user in our registry, and generally it is the same Active Directory server. In most configurations, it can be a different server, but the username's got to be there and be valid, because that's we have to validate proof authorizations and such for creating the LTPA token. And once that's done, we'll send the LTPA token back to the browser, and then they'll come back and SSO into the original request. We'll move on to slide 9. So this is on the domain controller machine, mapping an SPN to an AD user. So in this text here, we'll create a username, Espinego Web, in the Active Directory, and ensure that you don't check the use des encryption types for this account and user properties. This should only be used if you have a mixed Windows version environment. Otherwise, it should default to the RC4-HMAC encryption, and it should default to that. You shouldn't have to do anything for that to happen. But we run into situations where the des option gets checked and you get into some mismatches on encryption. Des is old and uses 56-bit encryption, less secure than the RC4-HMAC, which is 128-bit. There's a Microsoft tool, SetSPN, which you can use to map the SPN, which is, example there, HTTP/, and then the fully qualified host name, to this user account, Espinego Web. And to note there, the fully qualified host name is the same host name that's used by the browser when they access the application URL. One of the biggest, I guess, configuration challenges is that there'll be mismatches here. You know, the browser will have one host name, and they define a different one in their mapping here, and that'll be a mismatch, and it won't find the service ticket. So there's the example, setSPN minus A for add, HTTP/, and then the host name, space, the username that you've created for the mapping. The output there registers the service principal name, and it maps it to the Espinego Web user. Common problems, you know, the host name, we ask that it be fully qualified. You know, SSO is domain-based, and we'd like this to be fully qualified everywhere. So we want to make sure that the Espinego Web user is unique in the Active Directory Users and Computers panel. Do not map the same SPN to more than one AD user. That's another common problem that we run into. Situations when that happens, a lot of times the client is unaware that this is the case. You know, they're going in and they create the mapping for the user they want, but unknowingly another user exists that already had that mapping. So when the client accesses the app server and it goes to ask for the service ticket, it'll get the service ticket for the wrong username, and there'll be a mismatch in the checksum. And you'll get a GSS exception, which can be debugged and so forth. But there's some commands I'll go into later that can catch that kind of thing. Move on to slide 10. So on the domain controller machine, we'll create a Kerberos keytout file for that SPN. So previously, we just made the mapping, and now we can create a keytile, which ultimately will be copied over to the Webster app server. It just has to be generated on the domain controller that the clients are logging into. So there's a tool that Microsoft has called KTPass, which you can use to generate keytab files. And in this case, we'll create a krb5.keytab. And the syntax there, KTPass-out, the path to the keytab file, -prints for principal, and the SPN at realm name, which is the Microsoft Active Directory realm or domain realm, and then -map user, which is the user we just used to map the SPN. And then there's a map offset and a -pass with the password, and that password must match the actual password for that user. That's another thing that can happen is sometimes there's a disconnect between the Active Directory administrators and the Webster administrators. They're not the same group of people, and the Webster admin will have to make requests to the AD admin, and sometimes there's just a disconnect here, and we got to make sure that the passwords are the same and correct. Otherwise, we can really run into some headaches. But there's the example. It successfully mapped the SPN to the user. In that example, the KTPass command does two steps. It maps the user and creates the keytab. If you do it this way, you don't have to do the set SPN, just to let you know that, because it is confusing when you're reading Espinega Web documentation. It's not clear that you have to do set SPN in all cases, and you don't. You can do the KTPass with the map user and map op options, and it does both in the same go, which is my preferred way to do it, but I went ahead and went over set SPN anyways. So we'll copy the keytab file to WebSphere, the location specified in the Kerberos config file. The Windows 2003 server KTPass supports both DES and RC4 HMAC. Always use the latest version of KTPass for the right Windows version. And the realm name, just a note, is always all uppercase for the Microsoft Active Directory domain name. The KTPass is a big one. We run into a lot of issues, and we get a lot of PMRs where we just bang our heads. You know, we'll go over configuration with the customer, you know, three times just from scratch. And, you know, weeks later, we find out that the KTPass version on Windows was so old that there was some defect and it was creating bad keytab data. So KTPass tool is part of the Microsoft support tools download, and it's separate from the Windows service pack update. So it's not really a big deal to update it. It's like a 4 meg download, and it includes some other Kerberos tools, but you can just update that. You don't have to restart the server, and you have a new version of KTPass that will create good keytab data. I'd just like everyone to be aware of that, because that is a big issue we still run into. Let's move to slide 11. Espinego filter criteria. This is pretty handy when you want to exclude or include access URLs when the request comes in. By default, WebSphere will only filter based on the host name. So if the host name matches one we've defined, then we're going to intercept it. The filter options let you to exclude further. You can prevent some applications from being intercepted and so forth. And debugging, a lot of environments will just use the Snoop default application and set a filter, like in the example there, request-url --Snoop. And that means that if Snoop is in the HTTP request, Espinego will intercept. It won't intercept for anything else. And you can also do it from IP addresses, ranges. Let's move to slide 12. Okay, Espinega Web Authentication Command Task. The create KRB config file is going to be the one that we must use prevalently just to create the keytab data. Configure Espinego, unconfigure Espinego, show Espinego, and validate KRB config. These I'm not really familiar with. I don't use them so much. In version 7, I generally just go through the console, but it's worth mentioning here since this is version 7 WebSphere, so they're in the slide. Let's move to slide 13. and some additional filter command tasks, add a Spinego filter, delete a Spinego filter, modify and show, and what they do there. I mean, they're pretty self-explanatory. Let's move to slide 14. So here's an example of creating the Kairos config file. And in this example, we do it interactively. And so the output there, you can see towards the bottom, it has the actual command where you could run and define all of the attributes explicitly. But the interactive way, you can see that, you know, what I put in for each value there to create the config file. But generally, I personally will do the full command. I don't do it interactively. I just do it to show you all here. But it's admin task, create KRB config file, path to the config file, the realm, which is always in uppercase, dash KDC host, which is the DNS host name of the Active Directory server. And then dash DNS is the DNS domain, in this case, austin.ibm.com. And then dash keytap path, which is the path to the keytap file we already created. And then you press enter and it dumps out a config file. And in my experience, as long as these values are all correct, you really don't, I don't see many issues where the config file is the problem. It's usually in the key tab or somewhere else on the client or Active Directory side. Let's move to slide 15. And the default locations of the Kerberos config file for different OSs is defined here. There's some system properties that set it. On Windows, it's in WinNT. Linux, it's under etc krb5 comp. Unix, etc/krb5, and then Z series and I series. Don't see a lot of. The syntax is the same, whether it's an INI or comp file. There's really no difference. If you're looking at one, you wouldn't know which one you're looking at if it was a Linux or Windows-based config file. It's synonymous, really. So just a note there, you need to add this file to each WebSer application server host. So all your app servers in the cell that are going to be using Spinego need to have a copy of this file, because generally it's not under the config root, so it doesn't get synced. You've got to manually copy this file and make it available on each app server. Same with the key tab. Let's move to slide 16. And there's an example of the Kerberos config file. That's a very generic sample there. You've got lib defaults where it defines the realm name in uppercase, and then the path to the key tab, and the encryption types by default. That's what it looks like. You've got DES and RC4 both. Realms, which points to the Active Directory server. And then the bottom one there, domain underscore realm, which is the DNS domain, which points to the Active Directory realm configuration to use up above, which is under lib defaults. Let's move to slide 17. So for managing the Kerberos keytab, you can use ktab command or ktpass. There's a Java ktab command that you can use to merge keytab data. The ktab command, you can also add and delete a key from the keytab. And just a note again, you know, copy the keytab file that was created on the Active Directory machine to the WebSer app server. And also, again, you've got to copy this file to all the app servers that are going to be using this, because it won't get, as I previously mentioned. You can use the Java klist-k command to view the keytab content. Another command there, you see Java, the one in red, com, IBM security, KRB5, internal tools, klist, minus E, minus K, and the path of the keytab. I run this a lot when I get a customer's keytab data. It just dumps the output. You can see the SPN that they've got in there, or all of them if there's more than one, and the encryption type that's in there. But that just helps know what is in there and what they expect to work and not work. So at this point, you could use the admin task command, validate KRB config to validate these files. We don't recommend the customer to use a distributed Kerberos command called ktutil to merge keytab files. And I believe this is because in the past there were some issues with ktutil not merging the data properly, and I'm not sure if that was related to a defect in ktutil or if it's something that we have issues with in our JDK. So just a note that in my experience, it's really not necessary. KTAB and KTPass really should suffice. Let's move to slide 18, please. And in this screenshot, we're just showing that we've got security enabled, application security is enabled, and we've got a standalone LDAP registry defined. And up there on the right, under authentication, you'll notice that just LTPA is selected, not Kerberos and LTPA. That's a common issue we see where customers will select Kerberos and LTPA just unknowingly, right? Because Espinego does use Kerberos, but it's not pure Kerberos tokens. So just a note that we only need LTPA for Espinego configuration. Okay, let's move to slide 19. And here's the panel in the console, just under Global Security, Espinego Web Authentication. In this case, we've got the checkboxes for Dynamically Update, Enable Espinego, and then the new option for Allow Fallback to Application Authentication Mechanism, and the Kerberos config file path. You just put that in there, and it'll let you browse with the button there. And the second box there, Kerberos Key Tab file name and full path, it doesn't have an asterisk like a required field, but I've noticed in my own testing that it is required. If you don't put it there, it won't let you save the configuration. Or actually, it will, but it won't work. And I don't know if that's broke or not. I'm working with Level 3 on this to figure that out. But just a note that that second field is required. And then the filter option there at the bottom, this is where you define the host name that Espinego will intercept for. So in this example, the host name is w2003secdev.austin.ibm.com. The filter criteria, request-url percent equals snoop. So if we receive a request for that host name and snoop is in the header, we're going to intercept it. And we'll go to slide 20 to see what that panel looks like. So really, you just put in the host name, and that host name, like I said, needs to match exactly what you have, whatever the browser is accessing. Whatever host name that is, this should match exactly that host name. And it should also be the same host name that's used in the SPN mapping. And they just all have to match. As long as everything matches up, then Espinego just works. So the filter criteria is optional. You don't have to have it. And if you don't put anything, Espinego will intercept all requests for that host name. So all applications on a server would be intercepted with Espinego if you don't put a filter there. And you've got the options for Espinego not supported error pages and an NTLM token received error page. And then the two checkboxes at the bottom for trim Kerberos whelm name and enable delegation for Kerberos credentials. Let's go to slide 21. And this is just an example that if you have a security domain, you can define Espinego in there. Towards the bottom, you can see Espinego Web Authentication is enabled. This is just an example slide. So it said use global security settings, and you can see under there that Dynamically Update Espinego, you can see all the configurations there. And you could also override that with customizing for that domain and create a separate Espinego Web Authentication setting for that security domain. Let's move to slide 22. Okay, so this it looks like a lot of steps. In actuality, it takes all of about a minute. This is configuring the browser on the Windows client to use Espinego. There is some groundwork needed on the PC to do Espinego. Depending on the browser, the options are a little bit different. And also just make sure that client machine is a member of the domain for which SSO has been defined. So in this example, the machine w2003secdev.austin.ibm.com is a member of the domain controller for wsec.austin.ibm.com. Log on to the Windows desktop with the username from the domain. Open the browser. Internet Explorer, go to Tools, Options, Security tab, Local Internet, Sites, Advanced, and you'll just put in the URL. You can also put just the host name without HTTP there, so it would accept both HTTP and HTTPS. But that host name has to be there. That's how the browser knows to do Espinego authentication for that host name. And on the Advanced tab, there's one more option. You need to enable integrated Windows authentication. And I believe that is enabled by default, but you just need to make sure that it is set. For any reason it's not, it needs to be set. You just close and reopen the browser, and you can access W2003SecDev, and you won't have to provide credentials again. It will just log right in. Let's go to slide 23. And I also offer the Firefox configuration, and this is all documented in Info Center. You can just search the Webster Info Center for Espinego browser, and it shows both of the configs on the same page. But you open the browser, the address field, you type about:config, and in that filter list, you can type network.in or network.in star URIs to get the exact ones. But you'll double-click each of these and set the same host name in there. So in this case, the w2003dev.austin.ibm.com. put the fully qualified host name in each box or each setting, close and reopen the browser just like IE, and then you can SSO into the desired host. And just a side note here, you can't use wildcards in Firefox. I learned that the hard way, debugging the customer environment for a long time, and we finally found why Firefox didn't work and IE did. It was because they had a wildcard in their hostname. It's not smart like IE. You've got to use explicit, fully qualified hostnames, just to note that. So let's go to slide 24. And for debugging Spinego or Kerberos issues, you set these two properties, these two custom properties for whichever server you're wanting to debug. com/ibm/security.jgss.debug, set that to all, and then also the KRB5 debug to all. And these are also documented on the must gather for Spinego. Please move to slide 25. And along with the custom properties, you need to set the trace string from com.ibm.ws.security.*all. That will help us see what is happening in the security stack, along with the JGSS and KRB5, where we can watch the whole flow of the Spinego login and see where it's failing. Let's move to slide 26. Additional bugging, you can validate the Kerberos config file with the kinit command. You can do kinit-k and then the SPN. You can validate the SPN with setspn-l, and that's done on the AD server. Setspn-l and then the username that's mapped to the SPN. You want to make sure that the encryption types are the same. That's another one we run into a lot for these files. So the KRB5 config, the key tab, should have the same encryption types. And also to check the user account in AD for that use does encryption checkbox. That's also a big one. And let's move to slide 27. So to find out if the SPN is mapped to multiple usernames, which we do run into a lot, as I mentioned previously, on the AD server, you're going to run this ldevde command. So ldevde minus f space the output file space minus r and then service principal name equals. And then this is the exact SPN that should be mapped, whatever is the desired SPN. So it's going to dump out in the output file all the user DNs that are mapped to this host name. So ideally, you want to get one entry exported. If you see zero exported, then there's no mapping. If you see more than one, then that's a duplication, and you need to delete the incorrect user mapping. So we do not officially support any mobile browsers. And I like to test access with Firefox when possible. There's been some known issues with IE, just for debugging the Spinego configuration. And also I've seen domain policies affect IE and not Firefox. So sometimes that's a workaround there just to make sure that the config works. And doing the ktpass command or the setspn, you can prevent the setspn command from modifying the UPN. Because when you run that ktpass with the password, it'll modify the UPN value to look like your SPN. And some customers don't like that, so you can do the minus set UPN, which leaves it alone. And then the Java command to view the key tab contents, which I can never remember off the top of my head, but I use it a lot. Then the Java JRE bin directory for the app server, and you just specify that full path, minus E, minus K, then the path to the key tab, and then it'll dump out the output of the key tab. Let's move to slide 28. And so web authentication documents here, single sign-on for HTTP requests using Spinego web authentication, administering Spinego, and then the tips on using Kerberos service principal names. These are some more advanced ones. And the Spinego troubleshooting tips is really good. It covers a lot of the known except that we run into when dealing with it and steps to resolve them. Let's move to slide 29. And it's RFC 2478, which covers the Spinego mechanism. And I just put a link to it there if anyone wants to see exactly how it works. And there's a white paper. It's called WebSphere with a Side of Spinego. And it's a PDF that does periodically get updated. It also covers WebSphere 6, 1, and 7 and has the changes for the configuration in each of the differences. And that's one of the documents that I used in learning Spinego, which, just trying to set it up from scratch, and that one really helped a lot, so I put that one in here. Let's move to slide 30. So these are the questions that I've created, and they're kind of a work in progress. This is on our MuzzGather page for Espinego. And these questions really help support identify, you know, what's configured in this environment, what's the desired goal, what SPNs are being used, what AD version, just anything that we would need to know to really help resolve this issue. Because there is a lot of pieces to it, but it's really not too complicated, but it's just understanding how these pieces work together. And I'll just go over them briefly here. So the Webster version, AD version, what Active Directory username is used to map to the SPN, so we know which user account to check for properties. What SPN are they trying to access? We like to have the syntax and the commands that were already used to generate the keytab data, see if we find any syntax problems, that sort of thing. So what is the full web request URL accessed by the client browser? Again, that's important, so we know what host name we need to filter on and what needs to be in the keytab. They just all need to match. And is the alias, or is the host name they're accessing an alias, a CNAME, or an A record in DNS? And you can list all the SPN mappings, set SPN minus L, AD username. We'd like to get screenshots of the SPN filter entries in the Webster admin console. And then, or just ask as well, you know, are there any filters being used for Espinego? What are they? Find all the SPN mappings. Again, that's the LDFDE output, which is really good to find the duplicates. And also things that can play that are out of our control, if there's load balancers, firewalls, proxies, or web servers, you know, or anything between the client and WebSphere, we need to know that and provide some topology in the login flow that's desired. And then screenshots of the client browser Espinego settings, and by that I mean the definition in the browser options where you define which host name you want to do Espinego with, because that's also a key thing. And then the trace, so getting the Kerberos property set and the trace string, and then we ask for the Kerberos config files and the keytab so we can check them ourselves. But when we get all this data back, it's a lot to capture, but when we get it, I mean, it takes me all of, you know, 10 minutes to just go through and make sure everything matches up, and we can usually find pretty quick where the problem is or where to start looking. Let's move to slide 31. So I give some example here. I won't go into a live demo this time. I may do another presentation later where we just walk through it. But I got some trace analysis here so you can see. So we can check the startup log to see if Espinego initializes successfully. And you can search for the first occurrence of checking host match 4 to begin review of this Espinego login request. So this assumes that Espinego does initialize and succeed, so this is why we're seeing this part. So the request comes in for this host name, in this case ruby59a.austin.ibm.com, and then we're checking to see if we have this filter, ruby59a, and then you see it says has server credentials for return true. That means we do have it, and we are going to intercept for this. If that says false, then Espinego will not invoke, and there's just a mismatch here in either the host name being used to access or the filter definition. They just don't match. So that's one thing you can check there. Let's move to slide 32. Trace example continued. Assuming no authenticator is already present in an initial request, Webster will then send the 401 challenge to the client, who will send back a negotiate header. We decrypt that, obtain the user, which we validate using LDAP for our global security settings. Once validated, we send the LTP token back to the client. I just wanted to note here that where it says no authorization header found, sending 401 challenge to the client. This is normal to see this. A lot of customers will see, you know, this as a problem. You know, why are we sending this 401? Well, that's completely normal, and that's part of how Espinego works. I'd just like to make everyone aware that is necessary. At that point, I would review, you know, scenario capturing Espinego login to a trace file, and I'll go over additional points, but not in this presentation, maybe in another one. But that concludes the slide or the presentation. If you go to slide 33, I believe this is questions and answers. Okay, so we got some Webster product resources which you can go into. I guess I'll pass this back to Joseph.
Thank you, Josh, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Jared Pearson, your line is open.
Hello, Josh. Thanks for the presentation here today. I have one question in regards to the Espinego filters.
Okay.
From my experience in setting this up, that it appeared that with WebSphere 7 that at least one Spinego filter was required. You had mentioned that if there are no filters, then it's kind of a global where Spinego will handle all requests. But I guess that doesn't appear to be the case. Was there a known defect in regards to that where it was requiring at least, you know, one filter be specified?
No, and I say filter as in filter criteria. Like, you can define the filter for the host name, and on that panel, you've got extra filter criteria for, like, the request header and such like that. That piece is not required, but it is required to have one host name definition.
Okay, so you do have to have, like, a filter there, but no filter
yes.
criteria.
Right. I believe the panel won't even let you save the web configuration if you don't have one host name present.
Yeah, it was on that Spinego web authentication page inside of the Integrated Solutions Console.
Yes,
where the
right.
Spinego filters are listed underneath, you know, dynamically update Spinego, enable Spinego, et cetera.
Yes, at the bottom, right.
Yeah, okay. So I guess I was thinking that you would have to have a filter criteria. So you have to have at least one host name, but you don't have to have the filter criteria, correct?
Yes, exactly right.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
We had no further questions over the phone.
Thank you, Jackie. So if we don't have any other questions over the telephone, we will conclude the presentation at this point in time.